Okay, I think we can start. Boker Tov, everybody. Welcome. I guess it's last week's shiur. You know, we were early. We were in Israel, so we didn't do one the sitter. So it's been a couple of weeks. And we finished off the bracha of the Kabbah Shofar and the ingathering of the exiles. I mean, I just sort of mentioned the beginning for 30 seconds. We'll start now. Hashiva Shoftenu Karishona, the restoration of justice. That is the next prayer. As we mentioned, the first six middle brachot are personal things, you know, health and wisdom and forgiveness. And the second set of six blessings is national ideas, and gathering of the exiles, rebuilding of Jerusalem, judgment, etc. And then we assumed that the 13th bracha of Shomea Tefillah is sort of a summary, that which should all be, you know, that our tefillot should all be accepted. And we explained a few weeks ago that some explained very fascinatingly, no, that Shomei Tefillah, it's only after we unite and come together and set up a justice system and rebuild Jerusalem, only then will God hear our tefillot. Like it says in Megillat Eicha, that one of the punishments or the results of what happened of the exile is, Shatam Tvilati, God has sort of sealed our prayers. Our prayers don't reach heaven. There is such a concept that our tefillot are not really heard anymore. The Gemara says that the cries of people are heard, but not the tefillot. And they're also, they distinguish between the prayer of an individual and prayer of a community. Communities always heard more, and we've said, explained many times that the main reason we daven with the minyan has nothing to do with Barchu and Kaddish and Kedusha and all those things that you can only say with the minyan. The main reason we daven with the minyan is because our tefillot are heard better. And Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, are supposed to come together in prayer. And therefore, I know this is a little bit radical, but there's really no difference between a man and a woman. And we know when it comes to prayer, men and women are pretty much equal. I know it looks very unequal because we don't let a woman become a chazanit, whatever. But in terms of the obligation to prayer, the Gemara says tefillah is rachamim, tefillah is mercy. Women need mercy just as much as men. And tefillah is not really a time-bound mitzvah. It's a time-bound in a rabbinic level. The rabbis say we should daven at specific time, but especially taking view of the Rambam and the Kohen, you can daven whenever you want. Prayer is, of course, 24/7. And the Rambam says people used to pray as often as they wanted, when they wanted. So there, it's not, but even if it would be a time-bound mitzvah, it wouldn't matter. This would be an exception to the rule. So in theory, a woman should daven with the minyan too. But okay, sometimes it's hard. So sometimes it's hard for the men to daven with the minyan. But that notion, that the key notion is that our tefillot are heard much more when we daven with the minyan. By the way, talking about a chazan and davening, I just have to mention the last week I was in Yerushalayim, had the zechut to be in Yerushalayim for Shabbos. So Shabbos Mevarchim. So I went to daven at Yeshurun, you know, and the center of town on King George. I'm sure many of you are, you know of the synagogue, and I don't know what it's called, Yeshurun Central Synagogue or something. I don't know the official name. I think it's a German, you know, originally a German shul. So they have a new chazan, Nissen Saul. I don't know if some of you heard of him. So he apparently lives in America, but he comes to Israel 6-7 times a year and comes Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So I knew he was davening. I didn't know he came to the choir. I had to leave after 3.5 hours and they weren't finished yet. It was like a 4-hour davening. So, as my son said, he doesn't have to go to shul this week. He stayed in shul twice as long last week. So, made up, but it was really, I found it a beautiful davening. You know, it was really, and what was actually quite, I found very interesting is the amount of repetition of words. You know, they're all styled, the Chazanim all used to repeat words. They had a lot of repetition of words. It was also, and okay, whatever. I'm not here to discuss that, but it was really, I found it extremely beautiful. It's a beautiful voice, and with the choir, and they sang every little piece, and we were eating out for lunch, and you know, who thinks there's going to be a 4-hour davening? And somebody actually came later and said he did another piece after we left, whatever it is. But was also interesting was the cross section of people who were there. People who like Hasanu said, there were people in Shtreimlach and everything. It was across, was a range. When I walked into shul at 8:15, which is when they start, so I could barely get a seat. I don't know if you've been to Israel. I don't know how many seats there are. There are a lot of seats, 500, 600 seats in the men's section, and it was basically packed at 8:15. Anyways, that's just an aside talking on Chazanut and Tfilah and connecting to last week. Okay, so let's get started with the bracha. Hashivah shavteinu k'rishon avi yotzeinu k'vatchila. So, Marty, I think I saw you here before, asked me already last week, why does it say, or 2 weeks ago, Karishona, Katchila. So that's not so simple. We'll discuss in a few minutes, I hope. But let's discuss. Basically, this is a prayer for the restoration of justice. Hashiva Shofteinu Karishona. God, bring us our Shoftim, our judges, like in the beginning, Karishona, and our advisors, Kivatchila. Also, it's basically, you can say on a very simple level, it's a poetic license, poetic repetition. Basically means the same thing. Of course, people are going to look for the differences, but it's return. We should have justice like we used to have. So we say it in two ways. Our judges should come back, and Yoatzeinu, those who advise us what to do, also kivakila. So I'll just start with what the commentaries don't really talk about. Well, what this in many ways is a prayer for the restoration of the Sanhedrin. It's much more than that, but it's also a prayer for the restoration of the Sanhedrin. Why don't we have a Sanhedrin anymore? By the way, like why don't we have and what was the role of a Sanhedrin? Anybody wanna, tell me?
Something to do with smicha.
I'm sorry? Yeah. Has to do with smicha, right? What does it have to do with smicha? So we don't have smicha anymore. Real smicha. It's all the rabbis, all the big joke. Okay, that's a little bit harsh to put it, but that's we don't have real smicha. We have a teaching certificate. That's what smicha is. Heter hora'ah, the permission to teach. And the Gemara says one of the key conditions. I mean, it's fascinating. It's a sugya in Sanhedrin. We're not going to go through the whole thing now, but a little bit. One of the key components in order to get smicha is to be a good teacher. Have good pedagogical skills, right? We think, everybody knows, you can have great scholars who can't teach. I'm sure many of you went to courses in university where you had some top scholar, but they were lousy teachers. And some of them aren't interested in teaching. They want to do research and do their own things. But because the role of a teacher, of the reason you get smicha is to teach Torah. So if you teach Torah, you have to speak very clearly. So the Talmud says those who don't speak clearly and distinctly and, et cetera, cannot get smicha. That's, I would say, in many ways, even more important than how much you know. You don't have to know, I mean, whatever. Obviously, we need people who are knowledgeable, but to teach in a high school, how much do you have to know? You have to know more than the kids know. Believe me, that's not so hard. But the main role of smicha day is what we call heter hora'ah, the permission to teach. You have to be a good teacher. You have to know things too. The Gemara says that Rav spent 18 months on a farm. Because we don't have this anymore, because the laws of Bechor, a firstborn animal, have to be sacrificed, but if it has a blemish, then the laws are different. So to learn what's a blemish of an animal, spend 18 months. Can you imagine that? But obviously that's the idea. You want to rule on medical ethics. Maybe you should go to medical school. You want to be a rav to Paskin Shalas. And that's, I don't mean that as a joke at all. Somebody like Avram Steinberg, who is the editor of Encyclopedia Talmudit and one of the world's experts on Jewish medical ethics. He's a doctor, and Eddie Reichman, all the top people who write articles, they went to medical school. How else can you Paskin a Shaila? Rabbi Tendler used to talk about it all the time. He had a PhD in biology. What right does somebody who doesn't have an advanced degree in science have to issue rulings? So, of course, he would talk to his father-in-law, Rav Moshe, and give him the science, so he could issue rulings. But you have to have a familiarity with the science. It's better to have gone to medical school. It's a well-known Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach who, as far as I know, and I'm sure did not go to university, but my understanding was that he had access to some of the top professors at Hebrew University. And before, he wrote a lot on electricity and stuff. And my understanding is he had professors of physics who sat down with him. He was obviously brilliant, and they, you know, they taught him physics. And he probably asked him what books he should read, probably read books. I don't know exactly what happened. And he met with him, but obviously you can't. So Rob spent 18 months on a farm. Can you imagine 18 months on a farm before he would issue rulings? That's These are the type of judges we want to have. It's a lot of work, right? There's a difference between, you know, there are different levels. But okay, so we don't have real smicha anymore. So just we have a teaching certificate, so to speak. And why don't we have real smicha anymore? Why can't we give people you know, smicha? Whatever you want to call smicha, rabbinic ordination, that's like a modern term. I don't know. Why don't we, like what Moshe did to Yoshua, you know, he installed
him. The chain was broken.
The chain was broken, and so what? Who cares?
It has to be from teacher to student to student to student.
Right, so that's the assumption. It has to be teachers. So that, why? That's actually, I don't know if I have a good answer to that question, right? I mean, the idea that smicha has to be given person to person. Somehow it has to be an unbroken chain. It's very nice and unbroken. I don't know why is that so important?
Consistency.
I'm sorry?
Consistency.
Okay, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, so what happens now? So we can never have smicha again. That's it. We'll never, ever have a Sanhedrin again. That's it. Finished. The Romans, they killed Rav Yehuda ben Baba, I think, was the last person to give smicha. And we read on the keynote on Tisha B'Av, the rabbis put 300 spears in his body. The Romans began, I said many times, if the Romans would have understood what Torah Shebaal Peh was, what Mishnah is, they would have never agreed to Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said, you can have Yerushalayim. We can live without Jerusalem. It's also an important, very important idea. We can live without Jerusalem. Let us go to Yavne. We'll sit there at the Romans. Go to Yavne. Who the hell cares? Go to Yavne. A bunch of old rabbis are going to sit there in Yavne. Had the Romans understood that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai restored Judaism and saved Judaism, made it stronger, and rebuilt it better and greater through the, you know, Mishnah and Rabbi Gamliel and you know, and all the great sages of Yavne, they would have never agreed to that deal. They thought it would disappear like today. If Ben Gurion would have understood what the Haredim would have turned into, he would have never agreed. They would have never agreed to make such deals. But people think they know the future. They never know the future. But the smicha continued long a little bit later. The Romans wised up, so to speak, and then they banned the giving of smicha at the penalty of death. And one of the 10 martyrs, Asura Rugimachet, is Rav Yehuda ben Baba, and he was the one who gave smicha. That's it. So finished. We don't have smicha. And what does it mean if you don't have smicha? If you don't have smicha, you can no longer reinterpret the Torah. What it means to have smicha is you're allowed to, you know, do what they do in the Gemara. Ko malacha lo tasu, don't do malacha on Shabbos. We're going to redefine what malacha means. They can't make, I mean, again, it's a very broad topic. I mean, we did institute Chanukah, no, that's the question when they instituted. That was probably after Red Dread. We can't really institute new takanot, new gzerot. We can't take away gzerot. Without a Sanhedrin, you're very limited. And of course, you cannot implement much of Jewish law. You can't have criminal law. We have no ability today. No rabbinic court has the ability to investigate the criminal case. We hand it over to civil authorities in America, wherever. A Beit Din has no right or authority. So is that it? That's it. We're finished. No more smicha. So
well,
what are we?
Rabbi Kelman, I heard that if a certain number of rabbis get together, they can start.
So let's do the famous Rambam. I've mentioned it before, but let's take a look at the Rambam inside and see what the Rambam says. Okay, let's take a look. And this is, here we go, I hope. Okay. This is the Rambam, the Mishnah Torah, Hilchot Sanhedrin, the laws of a Sanhedrin, chapter 4, Halacha 11. So the Rambam talks about, you can only give smicha in the land of Israel, by the way. There's no such thing as smicha outside the land of Israel. Where's that here? Yeah, ein somchim zkenim b'chutz l'aretz. Can't have smicha Torah ki mitzion teitzei Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim, only in Israel. If you got smicha in the land of Israel, you could go teach Torah in Babel. That's fine. But you can't give smicha outside the land of Israel. Very nice. Okay, so the Rambam writes in Halacha Yud Aleph, Harei shelo ayu be'eretz Yisrael ela somech achad. Okay, fine. One person can give smicha. Fine. Now the Rambam has this very interesting expression, which I understand he uses nine times. As I was taught, I don't know them now where they are. Nine times the Rambam uses this expression, near-inly, it appears to me. As we know, the Rambam never quotes his sources. That's one of the big criticisms of the Rambam. The Rambam amalgamates sources. The Rambam was such a brilliant person. He would often, one halakha would often be consist of six different, you know, sources. They would weave together so beautifully, you think it's one source. But much of the commentaries on the Rambam is to figure out what the sources are, because sometimes they're not clear. And the commentaries, they have to scratch their head. Oh, there's a Yerushalmi here, there's a this, a Medrash, that. But every once in a while, the Rambam writes this expression, near inly, it appears to me, which means he has no source. I don't have a source. That's, that's okay. A rabbi doesn't have to have a source for everything. And on this broadest scale, that's what a svara is. A svara is a logical argument. The Gemara will often say, svara hi lama likra. It's logical. Why do I need a verse in the Torah? If it's something logical, I don't need a source. It's pure brains. Use your brains. That's, people, you know, are very nervous. What do you mean? You don't have a source in the Chumash? I don't need a source for everything. We have brains. So the svarahi lama likra. So if there's a verse to explain something I would have known, so Gemara says there must be something additional. The verse is telling me that I would not have thought of on my own. So the Rambam many writes, it appears to me, Nirim liadvarim she'im hismichu, she'im hiskimu. Funny, it's very, very similar word, actually. Hiskimu to agree and hismichu. You just have to change a couple letters around. Kol ha'chachamim she'be'eretz Yisrael, limnot dayanim. All the sages in the land of Israel to appoint judges. V'lismocho tamarei l'smichim. They have the real McCoy. They're real rabbis. V'yesh lehem nadun dinei knasot. They can do penalties. Like, when you steal money, you have to pay twice as much, or you steal a ox, or, you know, five times as much, whatever. V'yesh lehem lismoch akrim. And they can then pass on smicha to other people. Im kein, why are we so worried that, why is it so bad we don't see? He says, it's very hard. It's very hard to get everybody to agree to do smicha. And then the Rambam been interesting legs, but hadavar tzarich hechra. This thing needs a little bit of, we have to figure out exactly, you know, I'm throwing out an idea out there. I don't exactly know. I'm not convinced. I wonder how they translate hechra. Requires resolution. Okay, I don't know if that's exactly the translation. But anyways, and it was based on this Rambam, of course, that in the 1500s, after the Spanish expulsion, when some of the leading authorities arrived in the land of Israel, people like Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, so when you sing Lecha Dodi tonight, and people like the Alshich, and people like the Mabit, Rav Yosef Detrani, and maybe they're not quite as famous as Rav Yosef Karo, who is probably the most famous, there in Sfat, and Rav Yaakov Beirav, decides that based on this Rambam, we're going to reinstitute the smicha, and that's what he does, and seven people get smicha, including Rav Yosef Karo, and that's what Dr. Chorsky writes in his book on the Rambam. Believe that that's one of the reasons that Rav Yosef Karo wrote a Shulchan Aruch. He now had, you know, the real McCoy. He was a real rabbi. He had real smicha. Now this is going to be serve as a constitution of the new Jewish state. There are people coming to Israel in the 1500s. And that's it. Got smicha. Needless to say, that didn't seem to work very well. And there was a hue and outcry. And who are you? A chutzpah? Who do you think you are to give smicha? And that was led by, I forget his first name, Ibn Habib, the father of the person, or the son of the person, I believe, who wrote the Ein Yaakov. The Ein Yaakov is a fantastic commentary that in many places in Europe, that's what people used to learn. Instead of learning Daf Yomi, before Daf Yomi, and people want to learn, they learned Ein Yaakov. Why did they learn Ein Yaakov? Balabatim, because Ein Yaakov removes all the halachic discussions. It's all the stories of the Agadot of the Gemara. It's more interesting, it's more fun, it's easier, but a lot of them are not so simple to understand. I mean, it's not only stories, but it's a non-legal some morals, ethics. So it was a very popular book. Every Jewish library should have one. I think there was a new edition put out recently, which I don't have. So, a new scholarly edition. So I believe it was his son who led the battle against Smicha. And of course, he said, the fact that I'm against it means it can't work, because the Rambam writes all the rabbis have to agree. And you see, not all the rabbis are agreeing. So it died out. And then, as we mentioned, this was revived. Oh, I should have brought the book. Do I have it here? Give me one second. Okay. I don't see it. I'll have to look for it. I'm sorry. I have a little book written by Yehuda Lev Maimon. Yehuda Lev Maimon was, anybody know who Yehuda Lev Maimon was? Anybody hear the name? I think his name was actually Fishman, right? Yocheved, what do you know about him?
Well, he was one of the early Zionists.
Correct. He was a great Torah scholar. Yeah. He was one of the early Zionists. Remember, he was the first minister of religion in 1948, and he wrote a 6-volume work, Sarei Hameya, fascinating story. Sarei Hameya, the princes of the 100. In other words, the 100 is the year 1840 to 1940. 1240. We're 200. The Hebrew and English calendar are 240 years apart. So we're in the year 5785. Okay, in January will be 2025. So 785 at 240, you get 2025. So the year 1240 was the beginning of the sixth millennium, like Hey Tafshin Pei Hey, right? So the sixth millennium began, if we finished 5 millennium, and then so there's always 240 year difference. That's the Charem de Rabbeinu Gershon, right? What people said was supposed to last 1,000 years is not really accurate. It was supposed to last till the end of the Elef Hashishi. The Rabbeinu Gershon lived in the 10th century. The end of the 10th century. He was 2 generations before Rashi. So he says polygamy. So he didn't know, things might change. Right now, we can't have polygamy. The Christians don't like it. We live in Christian society. It's not right, blah, blah, blah. So he put a cherem till the Elef Hashishi, till the year, not for 1,000 years, till 1240. For another 250 years, he put it on. Anyway, obviously it was extended. Yehuda Lev Fishman, Yehuda Lev Maimon, wrote this book, Sarei Hameya, about his encounters. He was, I never met him, but he was, I get the impression from reading, he was like, he loved to schmooze, he was a rich loved and he loved to tell stories. He had a sense of humor and whatever. So he met many, many great rabbis, and he tells the stories about meeting them all. It's a very interesting book. Anyways, I don't know when he wrote it exactly, but, he wrote a little pamphlet. He wasn't the Gadol Hador. He wasn't, he wasn't the Rav Moshe Feinstein, but he was on the next level. He was, on the level below of Torah scholars. And he wrote a book, Hitkatshut HaSanhedrin Bizman Hazeh. Now that we have a state of Israel, let's renew the Sanhedrin. And it's about a 75-page book. I first heard about it in the first year that I ever heard from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein when I was in the Gris Kollel at YU Smicha. So they called it Smicha, but it wasn't Smicha. I didn't have real Smicha. But the YU Smicha program, so-called Smicha program. So when they spent the year in Gush, so Rav Lichtenstein gave us the Gemara Shir, and we learned Sanhedrin. And the first year, he quoted this book from Yehuda Lev Maimon, Hitkatshut HaSanhedrin, and it was a plea. It was a plea to the leading rabbis that now that we have a state of Israel, let's have a Sanhedrin, let's be a real country. Whoever heard of a country without a Supreme Court? That you live in Canada, United States, sorry, we can't do criminal cases here. We can't do punishments. We can't make new laws. Well, what kind of a country is that? What kind of a Torah system is that? You throw away half the Torah. So he said, we need a Sanhedrin. We need a high court of justice. And he wrote arguing based on the Rambam why it should be allowed. So it's very nice. He wrote a book and it collects dust. Most people never heard of the book. Nobody was in favor of it. And Heichal Shlomo, where the great synagogue now, sort of next to the great synagogue, that was going to be the seat of the Sanhedrin. And the Brisker Rav put Heichal Shlomo into Cherem. I have a first cousin. I don't know if he still does. I don't know if it's still Cherem. He wouldn't walk into the building. Tova, you can figure out who it is. So we have who wouldn't walk into the building because Sincherem, the Brisker Rav, a chutzpah, who did, and of course, I don't have to tell you, the secular people didn't want it either. We're going to have a rabbinic Supreme Court. So it went nowhere. But whatever it is something to think about. Okay, I don't want to spend the whole shiur on Hikashrut HaSanhedrin, but it is a fascinating topic. And it really does. We do need a son. I mean, you know, we do need something. So what we have today, other systems. But it's not a Sanhedrin. Listen, I was at my cousin's last week. He's a big Talmud Chacham. Really is. He was a lawyer in Baltimore for many years, but he's a serious Talmud Chacham. So he told me, I hope he won't be upset. I hope not. I'm not going to mention his name, but he wrote a 500 page book now. When he sent it in to the publisher, he told them that, he warned them about two things are in the book in case they don't want to publish it, in case they'll burn down the publishing house. And one of the things, and they, Tucker didn't publish it. So he had to self-publish it. And he says one of the things he wrote was that, the halacha has no, doesn't know how to deal with commercial law. He says, he gave me a whole example. Let's say, somebody buys, you buy on the futures contract, you buy next year's thing and then they ship it and then the shipment is lost and then who's responsible? So we have what's called, so you get and the guy doesn't know if he's going to pay. It's next year's thing. So you get a letter of credit at the bank and then there's the UCC that there are all these rules to do it. He says, all very nice. But in halacha, it's davar shelo bala olam. There's no kinyan, all these halachic terminology. The halacha has no methodology to deal with this. So he was basically saying the halacha should allow Jews, should lekatchila go to a secular court. It says all the prohibitions in the Talmud of going to a secular court were religious courts, archaot shel goyim, were idolatrous courts, pagan courts. But to go to the United States where they have commercial law, Dina de Machuta Dina, why not? So he understands that people will find that a little bit, controversial, but it makes perfect sense. The halacha, what's the halachas on corporations? There are no halachas on corporations. So people today, right, what should be the halacha? But if we had a Sanhedrin or we have some body, how do we update? Life has changed a lot since we had a Sanhedrin. But that's the Sanhedrin keeps Judaism relevant. There, he was basically saying it's a lack. It's a lack of applying Torah to the real world by just sort of sitting here and the halacha, and you go to a dayan. He doesn't know what a letter of credit is. I don't even know if everybody here knows what a letter of credit is at the bank. And all these, how the business, how the stock market works. If you don't have another, by the way, it's the same thing. I think the RCA on their Beit Din, whenever they always have one of the judges has to be somebody who works in the field. So if there's a dispute, a real estate dispute, so they need a real estate developer who adds one of the judges. Because if you don't understand the real estate business, in other words, when people enter into an agreement, two Jews in America, they expect to be bound by American law. They're not looking at the Choshen Mishpat, what's a Kenyan, what's not. Okay, anyways, but that's one thing. So I have a lot of introduction here, but we do pray. Hashiva Shavtenu Kereshona is really a prayer for the reinstitution of the Sanhedrin. And it would be very nice, but I don't see it happening anytime soon, but What can I say? It's very hard. It was hard always to get the rabbis to agree to anything. I was talking this week in school. We started to say Petein Tal Lumatar this week, right? As everybody knows. Of course, I started when I got to Israel because Israel, they started in Zion Cheshvan, and I said it when I came back too. In other words, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, even though they weren't saying it there, but once they started in Israel. But of course, the December 4th, we discussed a few weeks ago that the Rosh says you should save based on your country. So in Canada, you should save Etein Talamatar all year. Okay, but leaving that aside, the Rosh's view has not been accepted. So leaving that aside, the question is, why do we start on December 4th? We should start, the Talmud says we start 60 days after the spring, the fall equinox, which is what date? When are we supposed to save in Etein Talamatar? What's 60 days after the fall equinox? Somebody?
November 21.
November 21. So why don't we save Etein Talamatar on November 21?
Because the inaccuracy of the calendar.
Because our calendar is inaccurate, because the Jewish calendar is based on the Julian calendar, that the calendar, Julius Caesar, that the calendar is 365 and a quarter days. Or in the Talmud, this is right to Shmuel's calendar. Shmuel, who was the great astronomer, right? Shmuel knew the stars like the streets of Naharda. I think that's the expression of the Gemara. He was a great scientist. And Shmuel's calculation, the Gemara has different calculations. I think the Gemara was aware that it's not 100% accurate, but like a lot of things, you want to round it off. It was the pre-scientific age. How much matzah do you have to eat? You have to eat a kizayit of matzah. You don't have to eat a zayit. You have to, like an olive, approximately an olive. I won't get into how the olives are. We're not going there. But kizayit, in other words, a melol lugma. What's a melol lugma that fills you, drinking? It fills the side of your mouth. Everybody's different. How much is an amma between the elbow and the middle finger? Well, what kind of a ridiculous measurement is that? It's a ridiculous measurement for us, but in the time of war, the measurements weren't so exact. They weren't playing football, and it was 4 inches, and, you know, you lost the Super Bowl because you got tackled, you know, 1 inch before, 1 inch after. They didn't live like that. It was approximate, an amma, a tefach. You know, as a hand breadth, they didn't talk in inches and meters and feet. It didn't matter. So the calendar's 365. So it's a few minutes wrong. Who cares? The problem is, as we all know, that begins to add up. And of course, as is well known, in 1582, Pope Gregory chopped off 11 days of the calendar, October 4th to October 15th. I think I told you once, I told my class this week, right? I'm watching Jeopardy, which I haven't watched for a long time, ever since Alex Trebek died. I don't watch Jeopardy. I don't even know how to turn on our TV. But anyways, so they have, the answer is October 4th, October 15th, 1582. So I'm just watching. So I instinctively just said, what is a Seret Yemei Teshuva? Of course, I was wrong, but of course, it's Seret Yemei Teshuva. Rosh Hashanah was late that year, October 4th, October 15th. And of course, those were the days that Pope Gregory knocked off the calendar. You went to bed on October 4th, woke up on October 15th. But the problem is, or the halacha, Judaism didn't account for that. They didn't chop off. You didn't go on the 4th of Cheshvan and wake up on the 15th of Cheshvan. You woke up on the 5th of Cheshvan. So November 21st all of a sudden became December 2nd. Okay, so why don't we say the Tain Tilmatar on December 2nd? Well, that's because the year 1600, because it's 3/4 of a day every 100 years. So 3/4 of a day every 100 years. So you have to add an extra day, or you have to miss an extra day 3 times every 400 years, more or less. So the years 17, 18, and 1900 did not have leap years. The year 1600, 2000, 2400 will be leap years, but the year 17, 18, if it's not divisible by 4, like the 400, so the year 1700 didn't have a leap year, even though it normally should to adjust for the calendar. So December 2nd became December 3rd, and then December 3rd became December 4th. And then December 4th in 1900 became December 5th, the 3 days. So I'm pretty sure if you find a Siddur printed in the 1800s, it will say St. Tain Talamatar on December 4th. In the 1900s, you say in December 5th. And in 2100, you'll say in December 6th. And in 2200, you'll say it on December 7th. The problem is, pretty soon we'll start saying Tain Talamatar in March or May, and Pesach is going to be in August. So that's a problem. That's a serious problem. So we're going to have to fix the calendar. So I mentioned when the Mishnah Berurah discusses it, he said, "That don't worry about it. By the time it becomes a real problem, the Mashiach will be here." I don't know. That's not such a great answer. I know we've been waiting a long time for the Mashiach. He hasn't come. I don't know. And until we have a Shiva Shoftach Rishon, until we have honest judges that we'll get to now, I don't know how fast the Mashiach is coming. So that's a fast, but we're going to need all the rabbis to agree. And I shudder to think, honestly, I shudder to think what will happen when really Pesach, you know, this year, Hanukkah is the first day. The first day of Hanukkah is on Christmas. I'm sure most people know. And you remember 5-6 years ago that Hanukkah was on Thanksgiving for the first time ever. Because for Hanukkah to be on Thanksgiving, had to be like this year, Thanksgiving on November 28th. The fourth Thursday had to be November 28th, because that's the earliest Hanukkah could ever be. Had to be really early, and Thanksgiving really, Thanksgiving's only been around for 200 years. I don't know when the first Thanksgiving. So it happened, I think it was the first or second time in history. And guess what? It's never going to happen again, because we've switched the day. In our lifetime, that 10 years ago, Hanukkah could be as early as November 28th. No more. Hanukkah can now, the earliest it could ever be is November 29th. So we can never have that, the overlap of Thanksgiving and Hanukkah anymore. So new in our lifetime, we're not going to notice it, but in our great, 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 great grandchildren, Hanukkah, you know, it's going to be a real problem. And I shudder to think what's going to happen if the rabbis have to come to agree to fix the calendar, because this one's going to observe Pesach. No, we can't fix it. We have no right to do this, and we just have to wait. So they'll observe Pesach 3 days later. And I've said, and if you've been to enough of my classes, you've heard me say many, many times, all the fights we have, reform, conservative, orthodox, humanist, whatever you want to call it, everything and in between and more, thank God we all agree on the calendar. We can be one people. As long as we have one calendar, we're one people. Once we have two calendars, the Karaites are not part of the Jewish people anymore, because the Karaites didn't follow our calendar. They do Shavuos on Sunday. Once you change the calendar, you're no longer part of the Jewish people. So, and we had a near schism. This almost happened in the 10th century. In the year 922, a debate broke up between Rav Saadia Gaon, the famous Rav Saadia Gaon, the most famous of the Gaonim, in Babel, and Ben Meir, the exilarch in the land of Israel, who's much less famous, but the calendar has to be fixed in Israel also. And they had a debate it's a very technical debate, but the implication of the debate was that Pesach, Rosh Hashanah, was 2 days later. So for 2 years, 922 and 923, the Jews, I believe those were the 2 years, the Jews in Israel and Jews in Babel celebrated Pesach on different days. Wow. Thank God. That only lasted a couple of years in Rav Saadia Gaon one. And it had to do with if the molad is at after Chatzot on a Tuesday, it gets pushed off. And then Rosh Hashanah can't be on a Wednesday, so it got to be pushed off another day. So it's pushed off to Thursday. And exactly when the molad, how do you calculate it? So there was a whole debate, and it threatened we wouldn't be the same people. If had that continued, the Jews in Israel, we would be another religion from the Jews who lived in Israel. Probably they would have died out. Because how many Jews live in Israel? There would have been another religion only of Jews outside of Hutzarts. Anyway, let's get back here to the bracha. Hashiva Shavteinu Karishana. Any questions, comments? No, nobody has any comments. Okay. All right. Hashiva Shavteinu Karishana. What does that mean? Return our justice to beginning. So first of all, we should all point out, of course, that justice follows on redemption. The previous Tekav Shofar Gadol, redeeming the people. The redemption can only happen through justice. Torah is dependent on justice, and we see that in two places in the Torah very strongly. And where are the two places in the Torah that it's very clear that without justice, you can throw out the rest of the Torah? Where do we see that? Twice in the Torah, at least. Besides, you know, all the mitzvot in the Torah, to be honest, all those mitzvot, you know, but tzedek tishpat amitecha.
Is it Avram arguing with God?
Yes, so I'm not even talking about that. Yeah, true, of course. The fact that staka mishpat, melech oev staka mishpat, I think that's what I mentioned 2 weeks ago. Staka mishpat is why God chose Abraham. The ending of the bracha, melech oev staka mishpat. God, it says Bereshit 18:19. I'm not going to. We showed it before. I think Bereshit 18:19 that God is about to destroy Sodom. He says, "Hamechaseni me Avram at the Sharon Yosef. Can I hide from Avram? What I'm going to do? Avram's going to be a great nation. Avram's my partner. We're partners with God. We're the special partner. How can I hide from him? What I'm going to do? But he'll be a great nation. Ki yedati, because I know leman yitzaveh banav et bnei beito. He will command his household. V'shamru derech Hashem. They will follow the path of God, lasot staka umishpat, to do staka, righteousness and mishpat and justice. That is why the Torah is black and white. That is why God chose us. That is the derech Hashem, the path of God. It's staka. It's not keeping kosher or Shabbos there. It may be connected in some fashion, but the path of God, it's staka umishpat. And that's because Avram will teach his children that and his household. That is why God chose Abraham to become a great nation. That's what it says in the Torah. Right. But I'm talking, okay, that's true. But you see it, I was referring to two sort of the way the Torah is structured. The first, of course, is Yitro. That right before Matan Torah is the story of Yitro telling Joseph, Napolti, Paul, you're going to fall. You're going to fail. Moshe, you need justice here. And justice delayed is justice denied. And if you think you can do your own right, the people were waiting from morning to the evening, right? What's going on? Lineups, because Moshe is the only one giving justice. Yeah, so that doesn't work. There's a halach of Inui Hadin. It's a big problem in our courts in the Western world, the backlog in courts, you know, that and cases get thrown out all the time. The judge says, no, 5 years later, I'm sorry. And you have armed robbers who go free because they didn't come to judge them early enough. So we have Inouye Adin. You're not allowed to delay judgment. It has to be chick-chock, 1 through 3. So that's Yitro. Before you can have Matan Torah, you need to have a justice system. I've mentioned a number of times. This is even more powerful if you take the position, which many commentaries do, that Yitro actually gave this advice after Mamad Har Sinai. When did Yitro come to me? Moshe, there's a debate. In the Torah, it's presented as if he came before Har Sinai, but some say he really came afterwards. Emuk damu mukhara Torah. Torah is not always in chronological order. So if that's the case, then it's even more powerful. Why did the Torah put it out of order to teach that? And the second one,
I'll share with you. Before,
I'm sorry?
Maybe we got the din of a melech before we went into Eretz Yisrael.
What do you mean? What are you saying? When we got the din of Amalek.
Of electing a king who's supposed to support justice before.
Oh, yeah. Okay, no, of course, there's all, but Tzedek, Tirdof, there, maybe I shouldn't have said two places because it's all over the place. But I'm saying at two momentous moments in Jewish history, I guess that's what I meant. I mean, all the law, two moments in Jewish history where there's this great things about to happen, and we interrupt this to bring you a special message. This ain't going to work unless you have a good justice system. So it's not going to work to have, you're not going to get the Torah. There cannot be the Torah given without a justice system. And the second time is you cannot enter the land of Israel without a justice system. And that we'll show you inside. That's the opening of Sefer Dvarim and Moshe Rabbeinu. Where are we going here? Deuteronomy 1. Okay, so Moshe says, okay, we were at Har Sinai. Where were we? That's he's speaking in the 40th year. Where is it? Harev is Har Sinai. Okay, God said, enough time. You've got the Torah. Time to go to the land of Israel. Come to the land of Israel. Here, I'll put it in, if I can find it, put it in Hebrew and English. Make it a little bit easier. Go to the land of Israel, Eretz Canaan, Alvanon, Anarkadon, Harprat. I see, I give you the land of Israel. That's what Sefer Dvarim is about. Go inherit the land. Go inherit the land. And all of a sudden, Moshe says, you know what? I can't do this. I can't take them to the land of Israel. Why not? Because you're a lot of people. The Jewish people are multitude of people. And you should grow. And you're like, God promised Abraham, like, the stars in heaven, right? It's too much, and you guys are troublesome. You're burdensome. Tarka, right? Moshe's complaining. Echa, this is one of the terms of Echa, and we always read this before Tish B'Av. Ah, so how do you solve the problem? By appointing judges. Oh, that's a good idea. I put it every thousands and hundreds, lower courts, higher courts, 50 for every 50 people, whatever. And then I commanded your judges to say, better judge Ushvatatem Tzedek, to judge Jasmin Lotakirum Mishpat, don't show any favoritism. It doesn't matter a small case or a big case, don't be afraid of anybody. You know, judge has to be courageous. There's a lot of pressure. Right? Kimishpat Elohim, you're tearing out God's work. Exactly. So in order, before we can enter the land of Israel, that's what Moshe is saying. We're about to go to Israel. Uh-oh, no, but we can only go to Israel if we appoint judges. And basically what Moshe is saying, I can't do it on my own. I need judges. So what's Moshe saying? What's the role of Moshe Rabbeinu? The role of Moshe Rabbeinu is to administer justice. That's his main role. That's what it says in the Torah. I can't do it on my own. I need help. We're going to appoint justices. What do you mean? I'm the leader. I'm taking it to Israel. So we think of Moshe as our teacher, Moshe Rabbeinu. It's true. But Moshe Rabbeinu was telling us that the way to get to Israel, what really my role is to make sure there is justice in the people. So that's what I meant. These two great historical events, the receiving of the Torah and the going to the land of Israel, are dependent on justice, which is why the Gemara's opinions, the Mefarshim say that it was through the corruption of the judges what we know happened in the Second Temple period, that we lost Israel, that, right, there are many reasons given, Sinai, all kinds of reasons given. But so that's what we're praying for. Hashiva Shofteinu Karishana, we had corrupt judges, right? But you know, chanting Kabbalah, where does that come from? By the way, let's go back to our thesis that our prayer book is based on Tanakh, right? Where does this Hashivah Shav Tanakh Rishona return our judges like in the beginning? And our advisors, like at first, or really, where does that come from? Anybody? So it comes from the same place. It's the Haftorah for the Torah reading we just did. It's the Haftorah for Dvarim Aleph, and that's Yishayahu. And we read this right before Tisha B'Av. This is where they changed the tune, right? The maftir for Shabbos Chazon. And then if they do it properly, the person is doing maftir when he gets to this pasuk. I think it sounds so much better. You know, you've gone from the Eicha tune. So you see, this is it. It's copied basically word for word. And then, then you'll have a city of justice and Kirya. I know what Kirya is like. Is the town square, right? It's also another name for a city of Nemana. Nemana always is the reference to faith. So, what does that mean? So, actually, I think it's the Malbim says that the role, the difference between a shofet and a yoetz. What is it? Again, I would assume it's, like we said, it's poetic just license. In other words, they mean similar ideas. But again, the fact that they are different must mean there are certain differences. So what's the difference between a shofet and a yoetz? Right? I was in Israel because my daughter was graduating as a yoetz at halacha, a yoetz to give advice on halacha. Well, what's a shofet and what's a yoetz? So I don't know. So I mean, I don't know where they come up with this exactly, but the Malbim says a shofet is between man and man, which kind of that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Ushvatam bin ish lachiv, right? If you take a look at the pasuk, that's probably where he gets it from. So Moshe Rabbeinu says the role of the judge is lo takiru ishvat. Where is it here? Shamoa ben Achechem, between the brothers, Ushvatam Tzedek. So he says, a shofet deals with issues, it makes sense. When you go to court, you go to court. When you don't go to court to find out, if you can eat on Yom Kippur because you're sick. You go to court when two people are fighting with each other. So a shofet is Bein Adam Lechaveiro, a yoetz is, advice, Bein Adam Lemakom. And it's interesting, he advises you. Like when you use the word yoetz, like sounds like an advisor, if that's what it really means, and that's how they translated. So it means like, I'm not telling you exactly what to do, I'm advising you what to do. And that's Rav Soloveitchik, you know, many great poskim, they don't tell you what to do. They tell you, this is what I think, this is a look it up, if it applies to you. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein's introduction. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in his introduction, people ask me questions, so I'm giving you what I think. If you should read it, it's unbelievable. This is what he writes. I mean, people unfortunately don't read this stuff. And he writes, if you agree with me, then do what I say. If you don't agree with me, I'm not the only rabbi. You don't have to agree with me and do what you want. So I don't know if was he writing this for any Tom, Dick, and Harry off the street or other rabbis I've mentioned before. You know, Rav Moshe often said that when the beautiful tshuva, when somebody asked him if he can give money to the Erev in Manhattan. Rav Moshe felt the Erev in Manhattan, the original one they built, and maybe now it's a different Erev. The original Erev was not good. Rav Moshe Feinstein felt he was machmir neir. He said not good, but the other people said it was good. So somebody said they're at the shul, the people carrying the shul, they're having a fundraiser. Can I give money? They asked Rav Moshe, of course you can give money. Oh, I think it's no good. Oh, if it's no good, can't give money to help people be a Mechal Shabbos. I'm not the only rabbi in town. If the rabbi in your shul feels the Erev is good, you daven in the shul, give money to the Erev. It's like unbelievable. We don't have, that's Hashivah Shav Taich. We need people like that today. You know, it's not my way or the highway. The different rabbis. So that's a yoetz. The Malbim writes, and the Malbim is always the one who distinguishes between two synonymous words. That's the specialty of the Malbim. Anytime you can think of two words and you're not sure what the difference, look in the Malbim. He's the one who always deals with it. Malbim was, anybody know who the Malbim was when he lived? what his real name was. Now I hope I remember. The Malbim was an acronym. Mayor, boy, Yechiel Michel ben Malbim. Mayor Levush.
Mayor Leibush, I think.
The Mayor Leibush, right? Ben Malbim, Beg Mem Malbim. I forget already. All right, I have to look it up. It's bad. I'm sorry. But that's his name. And when did he live?
Late 1800s.
Late 1800s. You know, he almost became chief rabbi of New York. Baruch Hashem, he lucked out and he didn't get the job. And they brought in Rav Yaakov Yosef and destroyed his life. But the Malbim was a great scholar. I heard a story. I don't like these stories, but they tell a story once. I don't know why. I'll repeat it anyways because I heard. But I don't go for these stories. It's just that he was once sitting in the Chatam Sofer seat. He was a young kid. He was 18, 19, and he went to, I guess he was in shul, maybe he didn't know, and he was sitting where the Chatam Sofer sits, and the Chatam Sofer walked in, and he realized, so he got up, and the Chatam Sofer said, no, shave, you can sit. And he interpreted that means you're going to sit in learning. You're not going to grow in learning anymore. That's it. You have to sit. And he decided, therefore, he's going to exercise in Tanakh, because the only real learning is Gemara, you know. Tanakh is for women, you know. It's not the real learning, you know. I don't go for that. But that's a story that I heard in yeshiva. He was a great Talmud scholar too, but he's of course most famous, and he wrote very important commentary on the Chumash. I don't know how widely studied it is, but it's really quite beautiful. I haven't studied so much of it either myself, but it's really, that's one of his specialties that he does, distinguishing between various words. So that's what he says. So he says a shofet is a between man and man, and a yoetz is between man and God. And then he explains a shofet is to have, what's the pasuk? The pasuk is ir hatzedek. That's a shofet does ir hatzedek. Here, we'll just go back for a second. And a yoetz does kirya nemana. Right? You go to Yeshayahu. So ashiva shotai karishana, v'yotzai kevekla acharikain. Ir hatzedek is what a shofet does. There should be justice in the city. Nemana, I said, emunah always refers to faith in God. So the role of a yoetz is to get a kirya nemana, a religious city. And the role of a shofet is to get a city of justice. And obviously, you really can't have one. You can have justice without religion, but you can't have religion without justice. Can't have Bein Adam L'Makom without Bein Adam L'Chaviro. You can have Bein Adam L'Chaviro without Bein Adam L'Makom. So that's how the Malbim explains what the difference is between those two terms. Some of the other, what is the Vilna Gaon says? Yeah. I saw just this morning, the Vilna Gaon explains, a Yo-Eight, he identifies Yoetz as Moshe and Aaron. It's very interesting. And a shofet as David and Shlomo. The original, and he explains like this. What's the difference between Karishona and Kibatchila? So, Karishona, Yetzai Kibatchila. Again, it could be just poetic, but what's the difference between Karishona and Kibatchila? So the Malbim, let's start with the Malbim. The Malbim explains Rishon means one, two, three. Rishon means is the first, the second, the third. Kibatchila means the beginning. In the beginning. Beginning doesn't have a second when it, like, there, like, from the beginning, when it only happened once, then it's Kibatchila. And Rishon means it happens many times. So he explains, I don't really understand this, but what he says is we had good judges. When Moshe Rabbeinu appointed judges, we used to have Karishona, and then we had bad judges. So we went first too. So now the third justice, we want to have good. But Kibatchila, he says, I don't understand why. He said, when somebody gives bad advice, it's not advice. It doesn't count. It's not like we had advisors. We only have advisors. Kibatchila, when we started to have good advisors. So I don't even know exactly where he gets this. The only thing I could say is, right, when a judge issues a corrupt, wrong ruling, it still stands. It's binding. We know judges are corrupted and they, there's a lot of discussion, you know, the Supreme Court, how the Supreme Court gets appointed, and are they judging what they're based on their political views or based on what they want? I don't have to tell you how that is, you know, tore Israel apart. And it's a big issue in America because it's a big deal. Having proper shoftim, that's why we daven for it three times a day, is really, really important. That society can be destroyed over it. So he's saying, and if a shofet gives a terrible judgment, it's a terrible judgment. What can you do? Okay. Just one more thing, and then I'll get back to the Vilna Gaon. Shadal, that's Shlomo David Luzzatto, he lived in Italy. The Luzzatto family. Also, they're all related. I assume he's related to Rav Moshe Chaim, the Ramchal of the Mesilat Yesharim. I don't know the exact relation. Shadal was like what you call a frum maskil, a religious maskil. Marty Lection gave a series on talks on him. We have, if you want to look in our library. So he says a shofet are judges, and a yoetz is a political advisor. It's the political realm. The shoftim are the people who deal with our justice system, and the yoetzim are the people who deal with our political system. That's it, the difference between a melech and a shofet. And we know in Judaism they have to be separated. The politics and the melech and the shofet have to be, or the shofet and the yoetz have to be very separated. That was the problem on Hanukkah time, that the Chashmonaim, the Ramban, has a scathing attack on the Chashmonaim. They were Kohanim, and it's very nice, you know, what they did, but then it's really bad because they took over the political leadership, and Judaism believes really in separation of church and state, and we want our church, quote-unquote, to be observant. But when you mix politics and religion, as I've quoted many times in the name of Jonathan Sachs, you get bad politics and worse religion. And religion is about honesty and refinement and you know, integrity and helping people. And politics is about you stab people in the back and you get what you can and you step over everybody. It's about lies and corruption. That's what it is. It really is. As Rav Soloveitchik says, politics is kulo sheker, and Torah doesn't belong in politics. I mean that in all seriousness. That's one of the tragedies of the state of Israel, is how corrupt the religious politicians are across the board. And even if they're not corrupt, how they are perceived as corrupt by the population, and it lowers the status of Torah. So basically, Chilul Hashem. You don't have to agree with me, but that's, it's really, not good. We want it based, of course. We don't want the, well, we're not saying the government shouldn't give money to Jewish education, but once you mix in, you have religious parties, oh boy, and it's not good. And the Torah was very much afraid of that. And that's why we have the Kohanim and the Melech from Beit David, and the Kohen sticks in the Beit HaMikdash. Stay out of politics. It dirties Torah. Anyways, that's how he explains. You have the political leaders, advisors, and then you have the shofet deal with the justice system. And that's, by the way, there's some who explain that's why the Hanukkah doesn't appear in the Mishnah at all. Hanukkah is not, it's mentioned, it's alluded to what the Kriyas HaTorah, but there's nothing in the Mishnah about Hanukkah. And some say Rav Yehuda Nasi was very upset at the Chashmonaim, felt what they did was wrong. There's a whole debate about Hanukkah. Maybe it didn't turn out so well. They were all corrupted, the Chashmonaim. Anyways, okay. What can we do? Everything in our Siddur is current events, right? It's not, this ain't ancient history. But getting back to the Vilna Gaon, so I said, he says the Yoatzim are Moshe and Aaron, and the Shoftim are David and Shlomo. And he says, Techilah, he has a slightly different explanation. Techilah means there was nothing before them. Techilah means the very, very first, like the creation of the world, although it says Bereshit, but means Techilah. And Rishon means there were people before them. But he says, Rishon, David and Shlomo were the first judges to judge honestly. Again, I don't know where he's getting this from exactly. And Techilah means the very first. So Moshe and Aaron are the first Yoatzim, are the first advisors, the first telling us how to live our life. Whatever it is, I think, I think really it's saying a very similar idea. But Tashivashov Toech Kurishana, we're praying. You know, I know I say we always like to say it was better. Remember in the good old days. The good old days weren't so good. The persecution of the Jews and the shtetl wasn't always so good. The good old days. So you have to be careful. But here we are. Here we are, of course, praying for times of justice as defined by the Torah, as expressed by Moshe, Aaron, David, and Shlomo, and that is the only way we will come to the land of Israel. Just let me say one more thing and review. I think that's a very important line, and they should remove from us, here they translate sorrow and troubles. Again, Yagon Vanacha. So some say one is refers to internal problems in the internal problems in the Jewish people, and one refers to the external problems, the, you know, our enemies. We always know that we have internal and external. But the role of the judge is, it's harder to say how they deal with external matters. They seem to be internally focused. But the role of judges and judgment is to remove pain and sorrow. That's the role of a judge. And I'll say, we have to pick up on this next week, but we're going to discuss, we have to discuss the difference between judgment and lifnim meshurat hadin, before you judge. Because justice is strict, and justice can be very cruel. And we all know that, that strict justice, God wanted to create a world of strict justice, and he said that world could not exist. And we have this in the halachic system too. When a judge is bound to do the strict halacha, and then sometimes it's not fair. Sometimes the poor are going to suffer because, you know, the justice is generic and you can't have exceptions. And sometimes people fall through all the cracks, and that is too bad. That's the way a justice system has to work. And then you can have, you know, affirmative action. I don't know if to put it in water, you know, where it's not exactly justice, but we want to rectify some problem. And I'm not getting to the politics if affirmative action is good, but we're the idea that sometimes we don't do a justice. That's what I'm going to pick up next week, the idea of a pshara, and that's really how our Bate Dini works. Today, when you go to a Beit Din, do you go to strict justice or not? And you choose, actually. You can choose when you go to Beit Din, how do you want the Beit Din to rule? Based on, you know, on strict justice or no? We don't have to follow exactly what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. We can adjust it here and there. So that's what I want to pick up on next week. But you see, the role of the judge is to get away from misery in the world. Okay, just let me, so let's quickly review. We spent a fair bit of time talking about the bracha, Hashiva Shavtena Karishana. Justice is the follows up on ingathering of the exiles, because our ingathering of the exiles is only meaningful. We can only stay in the land of Israel with a strict justice system, a justice system based on honesty and integrity. So we gather in the people. And the first thing you got to do before we build Jerusalem, right? The first bracha, appoint our judges, just like we saw in the Torah, before we can get the Torah. Or we can even get the Torah puts in the story of Yitro, which may have happened later. The Torah puts in the story of Yitro, the importance of appointing enough judges so justice is not delayed. Even if it's, you'll get it eventually, that isn't good enough. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, God says, enough time at Har Sinai, now go to the march to the land of Israel. And God, and Moshe says, you know what? That's great. Let's march to Israel. Oh, you know, I can't do it on my own. I need judges to help me. That's amazing. There was the role Moshe is to administer justice, and in order to get to the land of Israel, God says, go to the land of Israel. Moshe says, I don't have enough judges. We can't conquer the land of Israel till we appoint more judges. Unbelievable. And of course, all what's being pointed out, all the mitzvot in the Torah, appointing a king, and tzedek, teared up, all these other things. But you see, and the momentous events in Jewish history are dependent on justice. And we discussed, therefore, the reinstitution. A true justice system needs the court to have great power. And for the court to have great power, we need to have real justices. To have real justices, you need real smicha. And smicha has to be continuous, and we've lost that. So what do? We can't deal with all of Jewish law, which is what we find ourselves today. So that's why there have been attempts based on the Rambam. You see, it's interesting. We said the Rambam said nearly. I'm assuming, I don't know, of course, the Rambam said, this is what I think in my gut. The Rambam understood it's impossible to go on into Jewish life and say we can't have smicha anymore. That's what I was saying. Well, so what are we going to do? Well, if that's it, we're going to have to rely on American courts, on Israeli secular courts, because the halacha can't deal with it. That's ridiculous. That cannot be. So the Rambam says it must be. There's a solution. So what's the solution? We all agree. If all the people agree, we can recreate it. Otherwise, the Rambam's saying it cannot be. He's not. He has no source for it, just his logical source and the historical attempts. And then we discussed exactly, we tried to decipher, instead of just doing the simple explanation, God return our glory have honest justices like we did, and advisors, that it means the same thing. We try to understand different things. A shofet, a yoetz, between man and God, between man and man, having a city of honesty, of tzedek, and a religious city, kiryat ne'emana, or does it refer to politics and to judgment, various approaches, what Rishonah and Tchila mean. But okay, those are really our side points. And like I said, next week, please God, we'll pick up on when do we really apply our justice system. And when this is the discussion, this is the discussion in the Gemara Sanhedrin that follows immediately after the giving of smicha. Told you, Rav spent 18 months on a farm. In order to get smicha, you have to speak well, you have to be a good pedagogue, a clear and concise teacher with proper English or Hebrew or Aramaic, whatever language, or Yiddish you're speaking in. Not Yinglish isn't so good unless everybody speaks English. I don't know. But it got to be a proper speech. It's right after that. It's in that context that the Gemara has a whole discussion on when we should apply strict justice and when we should bend sort of our justice system to do what's equitable and fair in the given situation, which may not correspond to what the general halacha is. Okay. Any questions? I see not so many comments here. Okay. Nemanut is trustworthy. Nace. Better than I think religion. Kiryan emunah. Trustworthy. Yes. Okay. Okay. But it refers, emunah generally refers to things between man and God, as opposed to between man and man, right? Nasata benatata be'emunah. I've often explained that beautiful, the first question that Talmud says God will ask us, was your business dealings done be'emunah? It's a strange word. Be'emunah, it should be be'yashrut. What do you mean emunah? What does emunah have to do with faith? Right? That's, you know, what does it have to do with, or even...
That means
right? So I say, sure. Trustworthy. I agree it means trustworthy, but the word emunah always has a connotation, animamin, always has a connotation of faith. And why I think really what we're saying, I've said many times, that if you want to know if somebody believes in God, see what their business practices are. It's hard to believe in God. It is hard. It's a Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai told his students on his deathbed, you should fear God as much as you fear man. It's very, yeah, it's easy to say I believe in God, but it's hard to really believe in God, that God's watching me and cares what I do, and it matters. So now, we believe that, yes, you work hard, but ultimately how much money you're going to make is up to God. Is the stock market going up or down? That's not up to you. You do your work and God determines this business will be successful, won't be successful. It's beyond our control. So somebody who cheats, you're trying to outsmart God, means you don't believe in God. A person who cheats in business means he doesn't believe in God. So a lot of us are atheists. I mean, I don't want to, you know, it's hard. It's really hard. That's why the first question. That's why nasata venatata. It, of course, it means was it trustworthy, but it means much more than was it trustworthy. It means did your business dealing reflect the fact that you have emuna, that you believe in God? And if you cheat, it means it didn't really reflect that. It means you think you can outsmart God. It's such a powerful idea. It's not just God asks us as the first question, we're honest in business. It's honesty in business. It tells us we believe in God. God's first question is like in the Ten Commandments. Anochi Hashem, I'm the Lord your God. Do you believe in God? How do you know if you believe in God? How do you handle your money? Are you willing to give it away? Tzedakah. Yaakov Avinu says, God, if you protect me, aser asra nolach, I'll give you 20%. Whatever. Okay, that's a powerful idea. All right. Thank you.
Excuse me. If Yoetz deals with politics, how about Yoetz halacha?
Right. So obviously, listen, how we translate in modern terms. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, there is a lot of politics from the Yoetz Halacha. That was, Chana Henkin went very, was very smart, really, how she did. Cause you can imagine, this is I think it's revolutionary. Some people think it's evolutionary. You know, I mean, many, you know, a lot of us are, I won't ask when everybody was born, but we're pretty much in the same generation. Like, you know, a lot of us. And, the world, it's unbelievable. If you would have told somebody when I was in high school that they'd have Orthodox women rabbis or even Yoetz Halacha Kamar, you think you're out of your mind. It's
right.
And women Talmudic scholars. So it was, you know, and there still is. Yoetz Halacha is more accepted than Maharad. You know, it's the one that's most accepted. But there's still plenty rabbis in the modern Orthodox world. I'm not going to name names, but there are plenty rabbis in the modern Orthodox world who are very, some are lukewarm and some are actually negative or actually opposed to it very much. But it was a beautiful ceremony last week. And,
yes.
Yeah, it was really beautiful. And Rabbi Alman from Flatbush.
This is my rabbi.
so he was there. He spoke beautifully. I spoke to him. And and Rabbi Berger, Gedalia Berger, who teaches at Jiva. He was there. Everybody came in from the States. And to see all these learned women, and believe me, some of these women are tremendous Talmidot Chachamim. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Is there a recording of it?
There is a recording. If you want, send me, I can send you a copy. It was recorded, and lots of people
can
watch it online. But are the Haredim very much? Yeah, I haven't spoken to them. Obviously, they were against it. And, it's an attack on rabbinic authority. And it's
authority.
Blah, blah, blah. It's not the way it was done, that the woman. But you know what? Like I say, who today goes to a male gynecologist?
That's right.
Nobody today would go to a male gynecologist for good reason. So why would anybody show? I mean, I hate to say it like this, but why would anybody show their underwear to a rabbi? You know, I mean, I don't mean so, but that's what some of the halakha they deal. They deal with a lot more than that. But but the truth matter is, you asked me, that's why she called it Yotzer Halakha. She didn't want to call it Smicha, because that would have been opposition.
Politics.
We just advise. We advise people. When we have a real Shaila, we discuss with them. But the bottom line is, and you can quote me, it's obvious they have more Smicha than most men. I mean, how many Shailas does your typical rabbi get? I can guarantee you the Yotzer Halakha gets more Shailas. It's on a narrower field. That they're getting more shilas, and they don't ask a rabbi every day. I know what a shilah doesn't, just very briefly, but if somebody asked me, do I have to say, if I forgot Yalav Yavah, do I have to repeat Shema? That's not a shilah. So it's a question you have in halakha. You don't know. So you're asking me but the halakha is established. That a shilah means a case where the halakha is not clear. And the poseg, are heart transplants allowed? Is a microwave, can you cook in a microwave on Shabbos? Can you use electricity? I don't know. I can't look up the Gemara in the Shulchan Aruch and tell me if I can use a microwave on Shabbos. So that you need. Rav Moshe Feinstein, you need a poseg. You need a poseg. That's a shaila. But 98% of questions that people ask rabbis are not shailas. They're just, the person doesn't know. I cooked it in a meat pot and the melech sticks and this and that. That's not a shaila. The rabbi looks it up. Here's what to do. A shaila means something new. So the whole issue is really misunderstood. So 90 times, what these women are trained, like most rabbis are incapable of answering a shaila. There are very few rabbis who can, depends what the issue is. A little bit of judgment. So that's a Yotzer Halakha, just answering questions that people don't know. And when they taka don't know, when it's a complicated question, they really do consult, like anybody would consult. So they're whatever. But anyways, that's a Yotzer Halakha. They advise in halakhic matters, whatever that means, you know. But they advise the people who ask them questions. And that's okay. Listen, what did I say? That the Gra says the Yoatzim were Moshe and Aaron. That's what the Gra says. The Vilna Gaon, Yoatzayich Moshe Aaron. So they're putting the Yoatzer Halakha in very good company. If you quote like that, all right. Anybody else? And then it's almost Shabbos already. You know. Okay. Thank you very much, and have a good
Shabbat. Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Okay. Bye bye.